You would please turn your Bibles to Hebrews, the third chapter, Hebrews chapter 3. We'll be spending most of our time this morning in our study in that chapter. But we'll look at a couple other places before we actually get there. I came across the little tidbit about a golf course in Arizona that has a local rule. Now, if you don't play golf, you may not be aware of the fact that in addition to all of the usual rules that govern the game, wherever you play it, there are also local rules that may be implemented by a golf course. And this course being in Arizona, and you're familiar with the kind of geography and climate and all that is concerned there. This particular course had a local rule that was written out on signs and placed around throughout the golf course at various locations. And the rule said this: if your ball is within one club length of a rattlesnake, you may move it. Seems like a pretty good rule to have. But I have two questions that come to my mind just on the surface of looking at that. The first question is, who's going to measure? And the second question is, who's going to move it? Probably most of us would recognize that if a golf ball was that close to a rattlesnake, that's a situation we'd probably just be better off avoiding altogether and just leave the golf ball there. You know, we go through life making those kinds of judgments and those kinds of choices of whether to avoid certain things and certain situations or not. If you turn over to, if you look at Proverbs, I told you we'd look at some other places first, but in Proverbs, the fourth chapter, we find where wisdom is being presented here. It's being personified. And the instruction being given, as though a father would be instructing a son, is to seek out wisdom, to follow it, to pursue it, to attain it. Wisdom and understanding, these are the things that we are to strive for in life. And most of us would, I think, at least on the surface, we would readily recognize that. But when you look in Proverbs, we find a little later on in the 15th or the 14th verse, we have this instruction given on the reverse. Proverbs 4 and verse 14 says, "Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not proceed in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Do not pass by it. Turn away from it and pass on." So in the midst of this text where we are being encouraged to seek out wisdom and to pursue it and to gain understanding and knowledge, to attain those things in our lives, we're also instructed to avoid something, and that is to avoid the way of wickedness, to turn away from it, to keep away from it. Just like if you had sense, you'd keep away from that rattlesnake. So too, if we've got sense, we'll keep away from those things that the Lord says are evil or wicked. And that's really the context, I believe, in which the text we're going to look at here in Hebrews chapter 3 is written, where we are urged as people of the Lord to avoid unbelief. Now, to some, it would be unimaginable to speak about unbelief in regards to Christians. But that's exactly what the writer undertakes in this passage, to warn them, to exhort them to avoid unbelief. Look, if you would, in chapter 3. We'll begin in verse 12. We'll read down through verse 2 of chapter 4. He says, take care, brethren, lest there should be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart in falling away from the living God. But encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, lest any of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Christ, if we hold fast the beginning of our assurance firm until the end. While it is said, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me. For who provoked him when they had heard? Indeed, did not all those who came out of Egypt, led by Moses? And with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they should not enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? And so we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief. Therefore, let us fear lest, while a promise remains for entering his rest, any one of you should seem to have come short of it. For indeed, we have had good news preached to us, just as they also. But the word they heard did not profit them, because it was not united by faith in those who heard. Now, throughout those verses, we see on at least a couple of occasions where there is sounded this warning about unbelief, about becoming hardened in the heart, so that we fall away from the living God. Did you notice he uses that phrase in verse 12 at the end of it, where he says, be careful lest there should be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart. Now, who is it that he's speaking to? It's not to unbelievers. He says at the beginning of verse 12, take care, brethren, be careful that you don't develop an evil, unbelieving heart in falling away from the living God. That phrase, falling away, interprets the Greek word apostasis. You can almost hear the word apostasy, can't you? The English word that conveys the idea literally, as it's expressed here in the English, the idea of falling away from the living God. The Hebrew writer sounds the warning against the idea that it is that it would be impossible for brethren, it would be impossible for Christians to fall away from God. There are a lot of folks that believe that. A lot of them explain when they come to this verse, and others like it, and say, well, these are people that just appeared to be Christians. They really weren't Christians. But what does the writer call them? He calls them brethren. And he says, you be careful that you don't develop an evil and unbelieving heart. Now, we need to understand that this is not some isolated sin that he is discussing here, but rather it's a manner of life. It's a habit of life, a custom of life. We're urged to avoid becoming unfaithful. What do you think of when you hear that idea of Christians becoming unfaithful? What does it mean to be unfaithful? You think of attendance? Well, he or she, they're just not faithful in coming to the services like they ought to. Do you think of some particular teaching, some particular doctrine? Well, he or she embraces this practice or this tenet of belief, and it's not true, and so they are unfaithful. Well, as far as those things go, they may certainly be accurate descriptions of unfaithfulness in the life of an individual, but they are not the sum total definition of what it means to be unfaithful. The writer is discussing here a manner of life that has been created in a heart that has become evil and that is now unbelieving. And because of that, the individual has become one who can rightly be described only as being one who is now unfaithful. So here's something that the writer is saying you need to avoid. You need to stay away from unbelief, Christian. So how do we do that? That's what I want to talk to you about this morning for just a few more moments. How we can become people who avoid unbelief. Well, I want to suggest to you that first of all, what we need to do in that, I forgot to punch those buttons. What we need to do is first of all to consider the invitation that is given to us, to consider Jesus. You want to avoid unbelief in your life, then what you need to do is you need to think about, you need to consider Jesus and His life. Back up in your reading there in chapter 3 of Hebrews, and look at the first two verses. Therefore, holy brethren, who's he talking about? Who's he talking to? He's talking to brethren, holy brethren. Therefore, holy brethren, partakers of a holy calling, consider Jesus, the apostle and high priest of our confession. He was faithful to him who appointed him, as Moses also was in his house. Now, Moses in his lifetime, he was faithful to God. And what the writer is saying here is, well, consider Jesus and how he too demonstrated faithfulness in the course of his life. Jesus was faithful. And I think probably a lot of times we'll think in terms of people who demonstrated faithfulness, as you know, people like Moses. Obviously, you could look to the 11th chapter of Hebrews. There's a long list, the whole chapter, about people who lived in faithfulness to God. Do you ever think about Jesus and how he demonstrated faithfulness? He is, of course, the greatest demonstration of one who gave faith or trust in God. You think about Jesus as God in heaven, taking on the form of a human being, coming into this world, living as a human being. And how much trust, how much confidence he placed in his Father. Jesus trusted, for instance, that he would be raised from the dead. Now, God knew all along that he was going to die. That was the purpose for which he came into this world. Jesus knew he was going to die. That was the purpose for which he came. He trusted that he would be raised from the dead. He trusted that he would be exalted. You think about some of the passages about the name of Jesus being exalted above all other names, meaning his position, his authority would be established above all of them. Only way that that came about was that he went through that earthly life, sacrificed himself, died on the cross, was raised from the dead, and was exalted then, put in that preeminent position. But he had to trust that that was going to be the case. He is the very epitome, the embodiment of what it means to trust and to be faithful to God. And so, no wonder the Hebrew writer would say, consider Jesus. How did he demonstrate his trust and confidence in these things? Well, he did so by being the apostle and high priest of our confession. He was the apostle. An apostle is just someone who is sent. Someone who is sent with a message. He is the apostle of our confession. He, He brings to us the truth, the message that we confess to. He is the high priest of our confession. He is the mediator. He is the go-between between ourselves and God. And He faithfully discharges that obligation, that responsibility, the duties. I've made this point to you before. You know, a lot of times I fear we may think in terms of Jesus as, well, He came, He lived, He died, He was raised from the dead, He ascended back into heaven. All done. Work is over. Not at all. He is the high priest of our confession. He serves as the mediator. The only way that you or I have to approach the God of heaven is through Jesus in that capacity as our mediator or our high priest. He's not finished working on our behalf. Yes, He completed His work on this earth, completed His mission. He glorified His Father by completing that which He came here to do, but that doesn't mean He's finished with His work. He serves as our apostle and as our high priest of our confession. So, do you want to avoid an evil and unbelieving heart? Well, obviously the first place to begin in that task is consider Jesus. Believe, think about Jesus and what Jesus has done and what Jesus continues to do on your behalf. And I'll tell you, it'll be difficult then. More difficult. Should be more difficult for us to be a people who develop a heart that has become evil and that is unbelieving. But now, the writer also says you need to consider an illustration. If you want to avoid an evil and unbelieving heart, then would it be helpful for you to be familiar with and know something about someone who didn't avoid? You know, if you want to know why you ought to avoid that rattlesnake in that out there on that Arizona golf course, talk to somebody who didn't avoid it and learn a little bit about the consequences of not avoiding it. Well, that's what the Hebrew writer does here. He says, let me give you an illustration of what happens when you don't avoid an evil and unbelieving heart. Look at verses 13 through 16. He says, encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, lest any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. He quotes then in the 15th verse from the book of Psalms, where it is said, today if you hear His voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me. Who's the they when they provoked me? Look at the next verse. For who provoked Him when they had heard? Indeed, did not all those who came out of Egypt led by Moses? Okay, here's your illustration that will teach us how and why we ought to avoid an evil and unbelieving heart. It's the children of Israel. Those who were led out of Egyptian bondage, led by Moses. You know the story, it's recorded in the book of Exodus. The 17th chapter is one of the instances that describes how these folks who became consumed, apparently, with forgetfulness and with pride and with rashness began to speak out against God. They spoke out critically against Moses, God's chosen leader for them. But they were in fact speaking out against God, having become a people hardened in their hearts, having become an unbelieving people. These who had witnessed the great power of God, the great way in which He delivered them out of Egypt, Now they come out into the wilderness and they begin to complain and murmur about how they've been brought out here to die. We're just going to perish out here. We can't get enough water. We can't get enough food. On and on and on. In spite of God's many demonstrations to them, how he was going to provide for them, how he was going to see them safely on to the destination that he had for them. We need to take to heart some of the characteristics of the unforgiving or the unbelieving heart that are demonstrated in that story from the Israelites. What did they do? They forgot. They just put out of their minds what God had done, how he had demonstrated his care for them. They became arrogant, haughty, and they became rash in the things that they said and in the things that they did. Those are characteristics of evil, unbelieving hearts in God's children today. But there's a third thing that the Hebrew writer says to us about avoiding evil and unbelieving hearts. And that is that what we need to do is we need to consider the implications. Consider what is implied by these warnings against evil and unbelieving hearts. There are consequences. Stan spoke about a few moments ago about knowing that there were going to be consequences to certain actions that he had taken. Well, look, if you would, back in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 17. And with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they should not enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? So we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief. How different do you suppose the lives of those people would have been had God not become angry with them? Had they not behaved themselves in a way that drew the wrath of God to themselves? What did they do to cause this? He says it. They sinned. They became, verse 18, they became disobedient to the things that he said. Obviously, those again are characteristics of an evil and unbelieving heart. How different their lives would have been. Think about, what did they lose? What's the consequence of what they did? Well, the consequence, according to the writer, is they did not enter into his rest because of unbelief. The rest spoken of there is the land of Canaan that was promised to them. That's where Moses was headed. That's where they were going to be taken. But because of their unbelief, they didn't enter into that land. And you know the story of how for 40 years they wandered in the wilderness, that whole generation of Israelites from the age of 20 years and above. They died in the wilderness in that 40-year period. And they did not enter into the land of promise. It was because of unbelief on their part. What was lost by the Israelites was the land of rest. Now, look on in verses 1 and 2 of chapter 4. Here's the point. Therefore, let us fear lest, while a promise remains of entering his rest, any one of you should seem to have come short of it. For indeed we have had good news preached to us, just as they also. But the word they heard did not profit them because it was not united by faith in those who heard. Do you notice he says they, speaking of those Israelites of old, they had good news preached to them. Do you know they had a gospel? That's all good news means. They had a gospel. Here was their gospel. I'm going to take you out of Egypt and slavery. I'm going to take you into the land of Canaan, and there you're going to have your own place, your own land. You can dwell there in freedom. It's a land that flows with milk and honey. It's a great place. That was good news to a bunch of slaves. But they didn't get it. Not because God couldn't deliver on His promises, but they didn't receive it because they didn't believe. It was because of an evil and unbelieving heart that developed in these people who were the covenant people of God. Now the Hebrew writer says this to Christians who are the covenant people of God today. He says, you learn. You consider Jesus. You consider Israel. And you consider the consequences that all of this teaches us about the dangers of an evil and unbelieving heart. What's lost to the Christian if we have an evil and unbelieving heart? Well, nothing less than heaven. Nobody here who has ever heard D. Bowman preach very often hasn't heard him say at the end of a gospel meeting, if you miss heaven, you just missed all that there is. And that's exactly right. That's what we have laid before us. The offer that the Lord has given to us. And if we will follow our leader, Jesus, with faithful, believing hearts, that's where we'll end up. But we can come short of it if we're not careful, and we can miss it. And it'll be because we've allowed our hearts to become evil and unbelieving. In those early verses of the text that we read, the writer spoke about being deceived by sin. And that's exactly what sin does to us. It deceives us. It deludes us. So that we will exchange the promise that we have, that we can gain with believing and obedient hearts. We will exchange that promise for something far less in value, far less important, because we're deceived by sin. There are a lot of things in this life that you and I need to avoid. We need to avoid bad places. Someone has said, he who would not slip should avoid walking in slippery places. We make lots of choices about things that we avoid in this life. Sadly, too many cases, folks end up deciding to avoid the good things. You know where those rattlesnakes hang out on a golf course? In most cases, they're off in the rough. Off where you're not supposed to hit your golf ball. Off where LD usually hits his golf ball. But you avoid those places. That's exactly what the writer in Proverbs was saying. Here's the way of wisdom and understanding. Here's the way that is secure and safe. Follow it. Pursue it. But avoid the evil ways. So may I ask you, Christians, are you avoiding the things in this life that you ought to avoid? Are you avoiding an evil and unbelieving heart? If you're not, then you need to stop and turn around you're going the wrong way. And you need to get headed back in the way that leads you to avoid such things. If you're not a Christian, then you most certainly are headed in a direction that you ought to stop and turn from. Remember that passage in Proverbs where the admonition was to avoid the evil ways. Do not pass by it, but turn from it. That's what every person here who is a Christian, that's what every single one of us had to do in our lives. We had to make a decision. I'm not going to continue in this direction any longer. I'm going to turn away from this way. I'm going to turn towards the ways of God. And that's what you need to do today if you're not a Christian. That's where you begin to avoid an evil and unbelieving heart. We hope you'll do that today and come in obedience to the gospel of the Lord while we stand and sing.